LMB's audio diary for the 3rd of February, 2024. It is a, it is a Saturday. That's what I said, right? I don't know. I don't know. It's a Saturday, and it's just about 8 o'clock in the morning. It is a cloudy day. We've had snow and freezing rain off and on over the last couple of days. It's supposed to clear up. And then maybe, I don't know, a week or so from now, we're supposed to get more, but that's a long-range forecast, I guess. We'll see how that plays out. It actually wasn't bad. We had almost no accumulation, but it did get cold, and it did snow a little bit. I'm only hoping that we don't have any more troubles with our water. That's all I can hope for, right? I've done what I can for the moment, but there's a lot more to do for insulating purposes. Anyway, that's not the only concern in the area. Here's one that should be existential, but it's actually not. About a day or two ago, a lady right up the street saw a full-grown mountain lion walk to stroll through her backyard like he owned it, which cats tend to see when it comes to wherever they're walking around. They're in the area, obviously. This is an area where they're endemic to, and I've never seen one myself out here. But they have come around. Somebody got attacked a few years back by a mountain lion. People's dogs and stuff go missing too sometimes. It might be 10 years or more now. Maybe more than 10 years, but a lady in Boulder, Colorado, which is a long way from here, but the environment is not dissimilar. I've been to Boulder. I spent a few weeks in Boulder. And it's not dissimilar from this area. And mountain lions are endemic to that area, too. This lady went out jogging, and a mountain lion ambushed and killed her. They're ambush predators, like all cats, or most cats, anyway. Cheetahs aren't, I don't think. But maybe they are. Maybe they are. But, They can kill people. It's rare, but it can happen. They can attack and cause all sorts of mayhem and trouble. So that's a thing to think about. And as I said, that should be an existential problem. Something that, you know, it's real, but it doesn't affect me. You know, it's not something that it might affect me. In theory, it could affect me, but, you know, and someday it may affect me. But right now, I can't even see how it could, right? But when they're right up the road, that means they're probably right across the road staring at me when we're out, right? Now, they have a big range, and because it's a big predator, so they have a big range, and they have to, you know, cover it, so it might not even be in the neighborhood anymore, but it's a thing to be aware of. So, yeah, we got that fun going on. That'll be interesting. Let's see, right now I'm going to the shelter. I have to the bunny, and then I have to get gasoline, and I don't know, there might be other things I need to do. We'll see. Tonight we have a game session for the role-playing game. I'm looking forward to it. Really, we'll be tying up loose ends from the previous adventure. I'm hoping that everything works out, and it I'm not going to go into too much detail right now, but it should turn out pretty well for everybody involved, except for, of course, the bad guy that got caught last time. So he's not having a good time, but that's to be expected, I would say. That's tonight. I'm looking forward to that, and I think I'm ready. I always think I'm ready, and then I'm struggling to find stuff that I'm looking for. But anyway, last night I did a simulated combat scenario using the Star Drifter Ultimate Dungeon Terrain, or SUDT, and as I you know, you may remember that I've come up with a set of random criteria for scenarios to test this thing, and I just roll dice to determine how it all plays out and how to lay it out on the board and everything else. So the one last night I rolled it was a The characters were supposed to free some prisoners and take them back safely. So I rolled dice to determine how many there were and where they were. So it turns out there were 4 of them, and they were being held in a jail in some corrupt town or small country on some planet somewhere. And they had to break in, get the hostages out, and get away, right? That was the whole scenario. So I spent time setting up the board. I rolled randomly for where they start, right? And my concept here, you know, if we're going through that sort of classic trope of going into some corrupt, small corrupt country to try to, you know, get your people or to do the mission, whatever. You know, we've seen 100 movies that look like that or are like that. They had to get through the border and get in, right? So I rolled randomly for where on the board the border would be. And then I rolled randomly for where the jail would be that they have to get to. And it turns out they were really close to each other. Different zones, but on the board, they were close to each other. That's a bad thing, because that means, well, as it turns out, it's a bad thing, all right? It was a good thing and a bad thing, all right? The good part was it doesn't take long to get there, right? The bad part is it doesn't take long for reinforcements to get there from the bad guys, right? So they get through, you know, I rolled some dice. There's one character that has the computer skill, and I gave her a chance to hack their computer system and put them in the system so that it looked like they were expected, right? You know, all their paperwork is in order. That's all been monkeyed up by whoever sent them. So their paperwork's in order and they're already in their computer system. So that allays some fears. But, you know, these are some tough looking characters, and they're coming. They have 3 vehicles with them because they need a way to get out with the people they're rescuing. So they have 3 vehicles with them, but not enough people to fill 3 vehicles. That's a little suspicious, maybe, right? You know, if you're in one of these paranoid little countries. So you roll some dice, or I did. I rolled some dice to see if the guy would be suspicious. Not a clue. Not a clue. He's like, oh, have a great day. Here you go. Right, so they go right through the border without a fight. Now, I was expecting, and I was all set up to have a fight there. But that didn't happen. Okay, great. That's actually good news, in a way, right? So they got in. Everything's smooth sailing so far, right? But they're not going to get out without a fight. And now they have people behind them, right, that they're going to have to deal with. And the way out is still that. It's so close. The way out is still that border, right? So it's going to be a little tough, a little tough. How are they going to do it? Well, in my mind, they have 3 vehicles and there's a dirt road that they have to take. Well, normally traveling out in this outer ring area where I have the locations of these things plotted out on the SUDT, normally that would be a long trip by foot, but in a vehicle, it's just one combat round, and you're through that. Why wouldn't it be, right? Even on a dirt road. So, you know, and it's not bad weather or anything, just, you know, making the road really bad, but in a vehicle, you're going to be able to travel much faster than on foot, but I'm giving it like a minimum of 1 round per hex that they have to travel, but it's only a couple of hexes over, right? So, you know, I figured, you know, I set the, you know, in my mind, I had this whole thing set up that once any trouble starts at the police station, I'm going to give these guys, you know, a random roll to see how long it takes them to get themselves together at the border, and then they're going to send some people, right? Now, they can't leave the border open, you know, there can't be nobody there, so they can't all go. There were 7 of them. 2 of which had rifles, and rifles are really, you know, dangerous. Well, they're all dangerous, and combat's easy to die from in Star Drifter, especially if you don't have enough armor. That's a thing. That's a thing that'll have to come up. And, I randomly rolled. It's only going to take them 1 round to get themselves together, and then they hop in their own vehicle and show up, and it's only 1 round per, you know, so only It's only going to take like three or four, I figured four rounds. Once trouble starts at the jail, naturally they're going to call these guys and say, hey, we're under attack or whatever. And they're going to get reinforcements, right, showing up really quickly, right? So this thing has to shut down fast. Otherwise, they're fighting on two fronts, our heroes. There's only four heroes, right? Four player characters that I've come up with that are involved in this fight, right? So they're four characters, three vehicles. They're driving up. And I figure, well, they park outside. Half will go in through the back way. It's actually a side way. And one will walk in acting all nonchalant, and one will be right outside by the door, ready to bust in as soon as everything kicks off, right? Well, in Star Drifter, if you take someone by surprise, that is to say, an attack comes when it wasn't telegraphed in any way, shape, or form, and a character didn't have any heads up or any real reason to expect it at that very moment, then you automatically get initiative, right? You don't need to roll. You automatically get initiative. That's how surprise works. But surprise isn't a dice roll in Star Drifter. Surprise is circumstantial. It depends on what's happening at that moment as to whether or not surprise can be granted to one side or the other, right? Well, in this case, he walks in like he's inquiring over an unrelated issue that has, and he's acting all innocent. And then he pulls out a stun weapon and stuns the guy behind the counter, right? That's when everything kicks off. And they're all wired up talking to each other live. They all have headsets and stuff. So the moment that happens, one character, she comes in through the front door, and these other two guys, she had already hacked the door in the back, the lock on it, right? Because everything's electronic. She hacked the back door. She was the computer person. She hacks the back door, and the guys in back are able to get in without having to knock the door down or blow the lock off or anything like that. They just walk right in, right? There were other things she wanted to do that she wasn't able to do, but that's the gist of how they all get in. And from there, it kicks off, right? So there are seven guards at the border that they drove past, didn't have to fight, and there were seven police officers at police/military at the police station, right, that they had to deal with. It took me about 3 hours of gameplay to set all this up and to get everything to run. It took 4 rounds of combat to get through these guys inside the jail, right? However, I'm using all of the rules, right? It's combat can be very slow if there's a lot of people in this game. And I'm using all of the advanced, not all of the advanced rules, I'm using advanced rules. I have an advanced set of rules that I need to test more, but it has to do with body zone damage. So if you get shot or hurt in some way during combat or really from any source, you then roll dice to see where on your body it happened. Now, you still take that full damage, but there might be status effects associated with the attack that you just received, right? So you take 2 points of damage, 1 point of damage to something. I roll some dice, and it's damage to your leg, and now your movement, it's cut in half, right? Because your leg is hurt and stuff like that. I didn't include that because I'm not set up to... right now to be able to record that and keep track of that at the moment. So I didn't include that, but I did include missing with the ranged weapon missing. So in other words, you shoot at somebody, you miss, where's the bullet go? If it doesn't matter, if there's nobody back there or nothing delicate back there like bombs or something sitting on a shelf, then you don't need to roll at all. But if there is a chance that something else could be affected badly by that miss, then you roll to see where it goes. So I included that. It was all done with advanced initiative, which slows everything way down, but it's much more granular that way, and you get to see who's going first, and it's possible to take somebody out before they can do what they intended to do. that way. So four rounds of combat. Finally, our heroes have taken, you know, have gotten it. One character, because of a ranged weapon missed by the guy with the stun weapons. He had like five stunners stuffed in his pocket, like, you know, old time pirates with their single shot guns, you know, single shot pistols all in a vest. Like, there's a famous drawing of Blackbeard that he's got like, I don't know, like eight pistols in his vest. And this guy's got five. He fired a bunch of them. He took one guy out for sure, and I think another guy he took out. Yeah, another guy he took out with it, but the others missed. And one of those, no, the other guy he took out was the gal that came in through the front door. I rolled dice to see where it went. I rolled dice to see if he hit. He hit. She flubbed her save, and she's out, right? And the rest of the shots missed. It's a real crapshoot when you're using stun weapons, but a stun weapon stops the fight immediately if it all goes well, right? You're fighting somebody, psh, they're down. That's it. If they fail, you know, if you hit and they fail their save, they're down. So yeah, so she's stunned and she's out for most of the fight. You know, she was there at the beginning and she actually did hit one guy. She shot one guy, but he had a couple of them. The ones with the rifles have better armor than the regular officers, right? So she shot that guy, but he's still up, right? He's still up. He's still got a rifle. And then, you know, the stun shot misses, hits her by accident. She misses her roll, and she's down. And she's down for most of the fight, right? She's down for most of the fight. And in Star Drifter, when you get stunned by one of these things, you're out for an hour, right? And they can't just shake you and wake you up. That isn't how that works. However, if you take any healing, they can wake you up right there, right? The Medico skill can wake you up. And, you know, they hit you with a stimulant or, you know, something like that, and boom, you're wide awake. The healing is, you know, it's the future. Healing's like magic in this game. So she was also hurt. She got shot a couple times, and she was actually jacked up pretty bad. Not as bad as the other guy, but no, she got hurt really bad. She had no more stamina left, and she was down into her hit points. And the other guy that got the got hit by the natural one, the critical, he was messed up too. But so anyway, she goes down. There's three of them left. They're fighting, and they finally they're able to take everybody in the jail, right? In the meantime, there's another section where the actual jail cells are, and that's where their four hostages are, you know, prisoners, hostages, whatever, are there that they have to get. That's a separate, it doesn't even come into play because it's a separate room and the door's shut, and, you know, I wasn't concerned about bullets possibly going through because everyone's using ship-rated ammo because I didn't want to get into, you know, other types of ammo. Again, it's complicated enough. I didn't need to continue in that direction. So that worked out. Four rounds, and it took me about 3 hours to determine it. And by the time I was ready to break, because I was falling asleep myself, making mistakes. I made some very obvious mistakes. Things like nobody took cover. You know, like you jump out and you start shooting, and they're shooting back, and nobody took cover. That didn't make any sense. Of course that wouldn't happen. One guy did take cover. He was virtually the only way a guy could hit him. This is one of my characters. One of the guys that came in through the back way. He just hovered in the doorway and just, you know, leaned out and took shots. He, you know, really good cover. They literally could not hit him without getting a critical hit. And one guy, the guy close to him, you know, bad guy close to him, I roll a one. He gets a critical hit and shoots him. Does double damage, right? And I'm rolling dice, and it's like, oh, geez, I'm going to lose this guy because this guy doesn't have good armor, right? I'm going to lose this guy. But I rolled all the dice, and he survived it, and he survived it. Oh, yeah, it was fun. It really was. It was a really good, fun fight. It took a long time to determine the whole thing, but it all played out. So they've beaten these guys. They've got the hostages. They can, you know, bring them in or bring them out, but that's how much time it took for the bad guys, the reinforcements, to arrive outside. All right, but anyway, it was a lot of fun, but I stopped there. I took photographs with my phone, photos of the game board, the layout of the game board. So next time I go to play out the rest of this fight, the rest of this, because now they have to fight some guys outside this thing. They're kind of pinned down. They can't get away without taking them out, but they have people that they're protecting and that they have to try to get clear of all this. So it'll be a fun little scenario to play out. I don't know when I'll do it again. Probably not tonight. No, of course not tonight. I'm playing the other game. So anyway. All right. Well, I guess that's it because I am at the shelter. Anyway, you know, when the whole fight goes through, finally, you know, near the end of the fight, after it was all done, you know, and the reinforcements are outside with their bullhorns saying, you know, we've got you surrounded. Come out with your hands up. That sort of crap. While that's happening, one of the other characters, the one that walked in first trying to play it all up, he's got a good medico skill. That's his prime skill. And he hit her with healing. She healed up. She wakes up and she's ready. So she's back. She's back in the fight. She's ready to go. I haven't gotten to the other guy yet, but they freed the hostages. They have them, but they have no easy way out. They've got to fight their way out. So I don't know. I think it's good. I think it'll be fun. I think the next time, I'm not sure when I'm going to do it. Again, we got a game tonight, so I won't do it tonight. But I'm ready to set up and play this through for the final bit of it. Now, you know, one of my goals is to video this and put it up on the YouTube channel. But it's a long scenario. I have a couple of challenges associated with this. It's a long scenario. It would last a couple hours, which, you know, that's going to be several game sessions, several videos, I should say, that have to be played out. And I don't want to edit. That's one of my things. I don't want to edit any of the video on, you know, when I'm doing these videos, because I hate video editing. I hate audio editing. You'd think I'd be used to it by now, but I've never liked it. And video editing, I can't stand because I don't understand the software. And I do it, like, I need to edit video like once every 2 years. I'm never going to understand the software because I don't use it enough. I don't have any reason to. So that's a consideration. So I would rather do all this out in sessions and have regular breaks and then reset up for the next session. But it almost seems like a waste to do it that way. And it would break the rhythm of trying to play the whole thing out. And I don't know. There's a lot of, there are considerations, in other words. But I really, really don't like editing video. And, you know, I've done it in the past, but it's a hassle. It always, you know, it never looks right. And it takes me hours to do the simplest thing because I don't understand any of the software. So it's crap and I hate it, but we'll figure it out. Because I think for one or two people in the world who might stumble on my video channel at some time in the misty future, it might be entertaining and a little edifying, especially if they're creating their own game. If you're creating your own game or working to modify rules of a game, I think it would benefit a person. So, yeah, I don't know. It might be a way to, first off, put something out, you know, put a video out, but also display the value of the SUDT because, you know, while this is playing out, I have, you know, I'm using three, you know, the zones that are close zones in the SUDT. I have, you know, one center one that's the close zone and then two auxiliary close zones that I can make use of if I want to. And I did, you know, I had a back room, I had a jail cells, you know, set up, and I had the central, you know, booking area where they grab people and they, you know, the front desk and all that stuff. I had three zones of this small little jail, right, this police station, and I also had a map of the outer area by just simply rolling where the entry point is, right? And I set up the closed zones to use that, right? And they got through that without a fight, so I broke all that down. And then I rolled to see where the jail was, and that was there too. And that remained on the board the whole time. So on this one board, I've got a map of where they have to go and what they can expect timing-wise. And I have my combat zones going on. So I'm still playing with this. I'm still testing the SUDT because, as I said, you know, it's a way to test not just the rules of the game, but this game board as well. I mean, ultimately, that's why I started playing and you know, working with the SUDT and videoing this stuff so that I could see if it all works out, to see if this is a viable way to play an extended campaign. Granted, there are plenty of people who online, on YouTube, you know, gamers who are using their UDTs, usually for fantasy games. There's plenty of them doing that, but the one thing that's lacking is any actual gameplay just using the SUDT as it's designed, right? Not SUDT, their UDT. I'm the only one on Earth who has an SUDT, one that's designed specifically for Star Drifter. But, you know, the principles are the same with a regular Ultimate Dungeon Terrain or Universal Dungeon Terrain. You know, people start modifying the name of the whole thing. You know, again, my inspiration came from a channel on YouTube called Dungeon Craft, and content creator named Professor Dungeon Master, right? He's the guy that I have seen, and he's promoted it. He might have designed it or came up with it. I guess there's some question as to whether his idea is entirely original. Probably, most likely. You know, he based it on other stuff that he saw that wasn't exactly like what he was coming up with. You know, this was his spin and probably the most refined version of the thing that had yet to be presented. And I've taken his refined version and refined it specifically for Star Drifter. So, you know, it's all kind of complicated and varied. Hold on. Okay, so one of the big problems I had last night was I don't have an easy way so far, an easy solution to keeping track of everything. Now remember, I think I've mentioned this in the past, but this game, when you're dealing with a lot of characters in a fight or some sort of combat scenario, this ends up being a resource management game, right? And most games are, right? This is the way I played it last night. It's more akin to a small-scale war game than it is to a role-playing game. Obviously, I can't do a role-playing game on my own, not to any real degree, right? I mean, I could. In fact, I think I could do a really good job with it, just pretending to be these other characters. But that's weird, right? That would be weird to watch. So we don't do that, right? We don't do that, and that's not what I'm testing anyway, right? That's not the part I'm testing. So the problem I have is resource management when it comes to tracking everything. Right, what was I tracking last night? I was tracking stamina, hit points, saves had to be tracked. You know, those don't change during the fight, but I have to keep track of who's got what number for a save. I have to track weapon damage, how much they do when they do hit, what their skill level is, so what number they need to roll in order to hit. And their ammo. I'm tracking ammo as well, because the bad guys in the scenario last night, they don't have reloads, right? Once they're done firing, they're out of bullets and they can't do anything, right? Now that will be something I'll be testing later. How dangerous does this become when the fight can drag on because the bad guys have extra magazines for their weapons, right? Again, we're doing this in stages. We're doing it in pieces. And in point of fact, one of the guys, he had just a pistol, but one of these guys ran out of bullets in the game, and he had to retreat. So he actually backed into where the jail was, hoping that they'd leave him alone. Well, of course, they didn't leave him alone, but they didn't kill him, right? Because he gave up immediately. He didn't have a weapon to fight with, not really. He wasn't going to take him on hand-to-hand. So he gives up, and they like take his cuffs and cuff him up and everything. And he's out of the fight. In these scenarios, if they run out of ammunition and can't reload, they're out of the fight, right? So that's the way the rules of this scenario, this type of scenario one. And I used them in the other scenarios as well. That, you know, that's a standard. If you run out of ammunition, you can't fight as an NPC. Player characters are different. They can do whatever they want to do. They're not bound by, a decree at the beginning of the game. This is the only thing you do in this circumstance. They can come up with stuff. And I have several characters, several player characters, at least two, that had that combat hand-to-hand skill. So if they run out of weapons, you know, or out of ammunition or something, they're going to start fighting, right? Now, that dovetails into the next thing in that I have worked on combat hand-to-hand, and I would like to test that up close. But I have no way of tracking that information and setting it up in a way, you know, because if there's a greater chance of stunning somebody, than there used to be using combat hand-to-hand, I have no way to track stun, right? So status effects I can't track right now, and some of the other problems I can't do, and I have a limitation. I also have hardware issues, in the sense, not computer hardware, but in the sense that my way of tracking things, my way of keeping track of everything, I think I have a nice idea, but I still don't have a good way of doing it. And what I've done is I have a piece of plastic, it was a plastic sheet, that I used wet erase markers on to write out the grid that I need. So, you know, a space for hit point, stamina, saves, for all the characters that are in the fight, right? So it's like a chart. And, you know, I write that with the wet erase markers, and then with dry erase markers, I go in and fill those out with what all the characters have. So that takes time right off the bat, right? And I probably doubled the amount of time it would take, because the marker I have for the dry erase, I have thick ones that work really well. I have thin ones that don't, and I need the thin ones to fit in there. They don't draw right very well. They clog up and they dry out, and it's just, they're terrible. I got to throw them out. I got to replace them with something, right? And in fact, I think I'm going to hit the dollar store on the way back, and I think I'll replace those with ones that work. In fact, there's a dollar store right up here. Let's see. In case you haven't guessed it, I'm recording this one entirely out of order. I've already gone to the shelter. I've taken care of the rabbit, and then I went and got gasoline and a couple other things. And now I'm heading home, but I'm probably going to insert this in the middle because it was more thoughts I had about the fight and about that sequence when the character got stunned and all of that stuff. So anyway, don't be confused. I know what I mean. Just listen to the details, and you'll be able to follow along. You won't even need a scorecard. Hold on. Okay, well, that was disappointing. Their office supply stuff is woeful right now. I've seen it bigger at this particular, this is a Dollar General. I've seen it bigger here in the past, but it's really decimated right now. And they had no dry erase markers except for one Kim's included in a larger dry erase board. If you wanted to buy a bigger one. Well, I've been thinking about buying a bigger one because maybe I could fit everything on there using a larger dry erase board. But I'm not going to buy that just for the one marker that comes with it. I want a set of small ones with different colors. That's what I'm after. Ones with fine point. I say small. I want fine point ones with different colors. And this place didn't have any of that. And I'm not, it was like $6.50, you know, so much for a dollar. Well, but that those days are long gone forever. They're gone forever. But there were some items that were only a buck. There were rulers there, two for a dollar. And I need new plastic rulers. But, you know, if I'm not buying the other stuff, why stand in line just for that? Since there's another dollar store on the way home. We got a lot of them out here because there's a lot of poor people. Well, there's a lot of those stores everywhere, actually. But I'm going to hit that on the way home and see if they've got dry erase markers. I've seen them there before. I don't know if they have them right now. They don't have wet erase. I had to hit Amazon for wet erase. I couldn't find it anywhere. Any wet erase markers anywhere. There were none at Walmart. There were none at any of the other stores I went to. But, you know, they're readily available. But they not on the shelves out here. So, and I also have permanent markers. And I was thinking, you know, if I get a grid layout that I really like, and that doesn't need modification, then I'll just mark it down in permanent marker. Thing about permanent marker, and we're talking like Sharpies, those can be hard to get off if you, like I've done it. I did it on my whiteboard that I have. I have a tiny whiteboard at home. Cheap one, cheap. And permanent marker is real hard to get off of that. So you can use it, you know, alcohol and probably, yeah, and I used nail polish remover, acetone, and it was still really hard to get it off. But it can be done. It can be done, but it's not really worth it to do it until you're sure this is exactly what you want to do and you're not going to modify it. The problem with, that's one problem. The second problem with permanent marker is it's not permanent up against any of the other markers. That is to say, the solvents that are in both wet erase and dry erase markers will actually instantly mark off or remove the Sharpie ink, right? So in other words, you know, I have my grid laid out in Sharpie, it's never gonna come off, it's perfect, it looks good, and then I go over it with a dry erase marker and maybe go over one or two of the lines when I'm writing, and then when I erase that, where I went over it with the dry erase marker, that comes off too, right? So now my permanent grid is all marked up. So I would have to touch it up again and again, which I don't mind. I don't mind that. But if I have to do it anyway, I may as well use something that comes off easily, and that would be the wet erase. So that's why I went with wet erase. Because the same problem happens with the wet erase. When you go over it with the dry erase marker, you go over those lines. When you wipe off the dry erase, the wet erase will come off too, where you covered it. So the biggest issue is I don't have a board right now that's big enough for laying this grid out. And it's funny because I started down this whole road. How long has it been? A year? Half a year? I don't even know how long. When I first started working on the game boards, right, for Star Drifter, right, the battle mats. You know, I started by getting these stick-on wallpaper things that already have hexes on them. And that's where I started. And I was really happy with those because those things you can write on with dry erase, wet erase, whatever, comes right off. You can wipe it right off, right? You know, wet erase, you have to use water, but still, it you know, it was really good, really, really nice, and they're really good for just using straight up. That's not what I'm testing now. Those are easy to test. They've been tested. You know, I tested them, but they've, you know, that's just a hex grid. You know, it's been used for decades. So, that didn't take any testing, but this does. The SUDT does. So that is got a polyurethane spray on it. And I took a black marker and I went over an area where there was some, was it a black marker or blue marker? And I went over an area where there's some blue paint that's been covered in polyurethane because I sprayed all that on. And I marked on it in a little spot, only I would know where it is, to see if that would wipe off with, you know, with like an eraser or a paper towel. It did, but it took a little work to get it off. Enough work that makes me think, if I really committed to drawing on this thing, I might not get the lines off. And some colors are worse than others in that regard. So it's always a good idea to be absolutely sure whether your stuff is adequate for the situation. And in this case, I'm not convinced. So maybe later, maybe in the spring or summer when I go over with a paintbrush and cover it entirely with polyurethane, maybe at that point, once that dries, maybe then I'll be able to use it that way. But right now I can't. All right. And I only bring this up because it's ironic that I was so proud of the fact that I found these things that work really well with markers, but I can't really use them for this job. You know, they're marked off to, you know, it just wouldn't be good. I need a flat white surface or just a plain surface. And that probably means a bigger whiteboard, but bigger whiteboards cost money. I don't want to spend real money, so I'm using sheets of plastic. I could use that and the whiteboard. These are remnants of the cutting board mats that I used as part of the experiment for, you know, there's a thought. I could flip over. I have a couple of these things that are cutting board mats of the plain hex grid map, right? The battle map that I created. I have some that are backed by some of these cutting boards, and those things you can write on with wet and drying and get it off just easy. If I flip those over, I could probably use the back of one of those. Though it's not the right shape, and it's not really as big as I'd like, frankly. I don't know. Still playing with that part of it, but the point here is just that I need the right markers, and I need the right size and layout for everything I want to do. You know, I want a space on the grid for status effects. I want a space on the grid for movement speed, because movement speed might be different between characters, and movement speed is affected by certain status effects. As I mentioned before, you know, you get shot in the leg and now you're moving at half speed. There's got to be a place to put that, right? I'll keep track of all that. And if I have a big enough board for all that stuff, then I will be able to keep track of it. I don't know that it'll speed things up, but I'll be able to test more and more and more optional rules. And they all have to be tested before they can be included, you know? And if I can test them all in that manner, and test them and test them and test them, and I have an easy way to keep track of it all, even if it is slow, then I think I'll be ahead of the game. I'll be exactly, in fact, in the game. And right now, I don't feel like I am. Yes, I'm testing some stuff. I'm testing, you know, some advanced rules, but not all of them, and they all need to be tested. So, still working on that. Still working on that. So if I can find some fine point dry erase markers that I can use, I will be able to jump right into the next bit, and that's the player characters and the people that are there to rescue breaking out and getting to the border. Right, with the idea that if they make it to the border, they can get free, right? But, you know, above game, since I'm the only one here, it's ridiculous to talk like that, but they don't know, of course, that how many people are going to be left at the border. I don't really know either, right? They're gonna leave at least one, but probably more than that, possibly more than that. So I'll roll dice to see how many they leave behind and how many go to the aid of the guys at the police station. And then we have to decide what they intend to do, right? Will they automatically attack? Will they, you know, put them up to a siege? Will they try to break in? You know, how's this going to go down? And how are the player characters going to go? Because their cars are right outside and the police are going to take control of them, or will have control of them. Or, you know, or at least they'll be right next to them with guns. So we'll see how that plays out. And I'll have to reset the board and, you know, set the whole thing up so that I can, you know, I can play this out. Because if they have enough, they know the layout of the police station. So they'll know that there's a back door and they'll try to cover that. But will they have enough people to cover it? They'll have to keep an eye on it at any rate. But, you know, will they try to assault? I don't know. I'll be rolling for all that stuff. The hostages are going to, they're going to be non-combatants, right? And that means they, you know, if they're too close to the fight when it's going on, stray bullets might hit them because, again, that's a rule I'm testing. And the goal is to get them out alive. So that, you know, if I can do that, then it's a success. If I can't get all four of them back, then it's a fail, right? They might be, you know, they might get hurt, but they've got to come back alive, right? Well, they don't have any armor. They don't have, you know, anything, you know? Should I strip the armor off of the bad guys and, you know, put it on the hostages? That might be a smart way to go about it. Would the hostages be happy about wearing armor that's all shot and bloodied up, even if it's still good? Probably they won't want to do that, but it is a matter of survival, so maybe that's a direction to go in. I'll roll for that stuff. Will they agree to it, you know? You know, it's stuff like that that I want to have all the scenario all set up. Will they have the time? Will the player characters even have time to have that conversation with the hostages? I don't know. Okay, hold on. Okay, that was another Dollar General. As I say, they got them everywhere. But this one had some markers. They did. They actually had a variety of them. They had four different kinds. One of which was a brand name, and it was the most expensive. But, you know, I've done the no-name cheap ones. They didn't work out, so I'm going with the brand name because I know they will. So that was more expensive. And then I got some, you know, other junk because I can't just walk in without. Well, I got a couple rulers. I need plastic rulers because I've been using the one I've got for a long time. And it's not in the best of shape by now because I line it up and cut with my craft knife with it, so it's all chewed up and everything. Everything I have is junk, and these will be junk too, but they were two for a dollar, so can't go wrong with that, with both the inches and centimeters in it. And I use centimeters when I'm working, generally speaking. It was a conscious decision to try to get much more comfortable with the metric system, because anyone who's from the U.S. will know, you know, how difficult it is for us to wrap our heads around that. You know, because we don't encounter it in everyday life, usually. You know, you have to actively look to see. Now, I'm still not to the point where I'm counting kilometers per hour and, you know, liters of gasoline when I put it in. I'm not doing that much, but at least in little ways, like measuring and stuff, when I'm doing paper crafts or any of this sort of thing, then I use it. So I got that and I got other stuff. So, now I guess I'll go home. I don't know what I'm doing. I should get out and record record Edict Zero FIS. I didn't want to do that. I don't know. It's not windy right now, but it's supposed to get windy. I should have done that during the week, and I just could not get myself motivated to get off the couch. And that was my bad. But I could have done it, and then all of the days of crap weather, it wouldn't have mattered because it would have already been done and on its way. So I just decided I'll do it next week during, you know, better weather. Yeah, there is some wind here. We'll see. I don't think I'll end up doing it today, though. In which case, I'll just sort of, I don't know, putter around, maybe work with these, get myself prepped. I've done all my prep work for the game tonight. As I say, I think I've done all my prep work. But well, you know, we'll go on. I have to charge my phone because I use my phone for the audio when I'm talking to the players, because our internet connection is so bad. It's not trustworthy. But I haven't had any trouble using the phone, the app for the phone. So, and we use Jitsi, which Klaatu told me about. He turned me onto that. So, boy, you couldn't ask for a better, more reliable setup. At least I couldn't, you know. Like, almost everything else that I've ever used, including big name ones like Skype and stuff, they've always been choppy and crappy. But Jitsi, at least over the phone app is nearly flawless. It's really good for me. But other things like Mumble and stuff, usually good, but it depends on if other people in the house are using the internet or what the deal is, right? But this, since it's going over my phone and using my data plan, which we have, I think we have an unlimited plan. I've never reached the limit, so it must be, you know, effectively it is for me, right? Whether it is or not. I just have never had a problem with it. So, and I'm not a phone guy generally, but I'm, boy, you couldn't ask for a better setup. And this way, people can do whatever they want with the internet, and it's not really affecting me because mostly we are using our voices. It's mostly theater of the mind. And it's only when there's a problem or when they need to see something that we start using Owlbear Rodeo. And I haven't had any problems with that regarding getting stuff to run, even when everybody's, you know, streaming video or talking to their friends or any of that stuff. So it's worked out really well so far from a tech standpoint. I've had to jump through some hoops. I've had to jump through some flaming hoops to get here, but this all does seem to work. So I'm cautiously optimistic about tonight as well, for the same reason. And I say cautiously optimistic because, you know, things can go wrong. Things can go wrong without any heads up. So that's where we are. I'm hoping, well, everything can change after tonight for the game and the campaign. Everything can change for the players, for me. As a game master, everything could change. It all depends on what they choose to do. So, and there are a bunch of things that could happen or not, depending on what they choose to do. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, I guess that's it for today, because I am finally home.